In her Bronx apartment on that March afternoon in 1967, my mother was listening to the wind. It had a message for her. She was ready to let it blow her west, blow her all the way across the country. It was spring, not winter, but the world around her was as drab as in the song. She didn't belong here among these brick box apartment buildings, the charmless storefronts, the drug stores and nail salons and bodegas with their dirty windows and weathered awnings. She hated the dreary stretch of Ogden Avenue and the swamp green swath of the Harlem River. She didn't care if she never saw any of it again. It was time to leave it all behind. Birds don't think about flying south, they just fall into formation. They yield to the great pull, the directive written into their wings. What she felt now was like that. And it wasn't just her. What was happening now was a great migration. She could almost hear the rustling across the country as the bards and muses and dreamers and seekers and poets and mystics and flower children came forth from their former places to heed the call. She saw them hitchhiking on the highway, driving VW buses, riding in makeshift caravans and gypsy wagons, walking with rucksacks and blankets and musical instruments, shawled and beaded and embroidered and feathered and fringed. All of them were tuned into the same frequency and heading west. California was the gathering place, the Mecca. It was where she belonged. The people making their way there were her rightful tribe. She was one of them, anyone could see that. She had waist-length hair the color of sunflower honey and light blue eyes like an invitation. Not everyone heard the call, of course. The country was still full of establishment types with no interest in expanding their consciousness. The war was still going on and plenty of people were still into working for the man. She refused to be left behind with them. She was going. Louis, her husband, knew this. Or rather, he was willing to defer to her certainty. He had gone there ahead of her, to find them a place and himself a job. And that was a good thing, because she could take care of her problem while he was away. The problem wasn't that she was unexpectedly pregnant for the fourth time. No, that would have been fine under ordinary circumstances. She had three kids already, what difference would one more make? She liked being pregnant, and she didn't mind babies. The problem was that she couldn't be sure who its father was. Of course, it could be Louis, which would be the best thing. He had already given her Pablo and Isabella, and he treated Alan, her first baby, just the same as them. Alan's father was a bartender at McSorley's old alehouse. He had stepped outside for a smoke one autumn evening when my mother happened by and asked him for a light. The moment she heard his brogue, she decided to go to bed with him. She never saw him again, and by the time she learned she was pregnant, she didn't even remember his name. At that time, she was a waitress in a pancake house. She had moved to New York City to be an actress, but so far the only roles she'd been offered were in blue movies. She was staying uptown with her Aunt Lily, but she knew she would never be forgiven an illegitimate pregnancy. She would surely lose her waitressing job for the same reason, but she had some time before that would happen. She was naturally slender and would not start to show beneath her loose peasant blouses until the sixth or seventh month. Louis worked at the pancake house, too. He was the Puerto Rican short-order cook. He winked at her from the kitchen whenever she picked up her plates. He was handsome and muscular, and she liked his ease at the stove. She liked the cigarette he kept tucked behind his ear and the slash of a scar beneath his left eye. By the time she was 8 months along, she was living in his Bronx apartment, and he was smitten with her, willing to treat her baby as his own. He wouldn't do that with this baby, though, not unless he believed it was his. Of course, he might believe it was his, even if it wasn't. If the father were William, for instance, Louis would never suspect a thing. William was her childhood friend, her first love. His hair was dark and his eyes were similar to her own. Everyone would say the child took after her and leave it at that. She and William had met when he was 14 and she was only 10. Unlike any of the other men in her life, he had known her before. And when he looked at her, he still saw purity and girlishness and innocence. Lovely. His word for her was lovely. He looked at her the way a sailor might look at a mermaid, as an otherworldly creature he could never really have.